From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 16th day of March, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. We'll hear from Ben Brown at University of Missouri, Columbia. He's an Extension agricultural economist there. Part of the FAPRI team, they've released some updated numbers on an agricultural outlook going 10 years out, but have some information about this year as well. And they've also written, at least Ben has, co-authored with Carl Zuloff from The Ohio State, an article to the Farm Doc Daily website. We'll discuss all of that, and we'll also take a look at the weather forecast, too, with Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn today finished at 5.54 and a quarter. That was up 4 3/4. July at 5.41 and 3/4, 4 higher. In December at 4.77 and 3/4, down a penny. Bean meal futures finished at 4.06.10, down 1.30. And the bean oil at 55.09, up a nickel. Soybeans in the May contract at $14.23 and a quarter, 3 3/4 higher. In July at 14.13 and 3/4, up 3.5 cents. November at 12.45, that finished a penny higher for the day. Live cattle futures in Chicago, the April contract at $118.20, down 92.5 cents for the afternoon. Feeders at 143.32.5, 60 lower, and the lean hogs at $92.90, up $2.35. We're now joined by Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, to talk about the marketplace in Chicago. Hi, Wayne. Thanks for being with us today.
Hey, great to be here today, Todd. We had a lot of fog over here this morning. I hope it's a little clearer over there.
It wasn't too bad over here today. I do wonder why in Chicago, not a different subject, not as quite as volatile as fog, although it kind of seems slower today. And most of the trade thinking that some of the changes that took place and the number of contracts that could be in place by any individual institution might cause some volatility. That's not happened this week so far. Are we still waiting on that?
I guess we are, because it hasn't happened yet. I think that the answer to that is there's nothing telling the investment people or the funds to double down on what they already have until we see some more things happen. I think that we'll maybe see some of that happen after the 31st of the month, you know, depending on what we see in the stocks number, what we see in the, you know, presented the acreage anticipation. You know, the numbers coming out by the private firms this month, we're raising the planted acres, you know, a little bit on both corn and beans here. So that's one of the things that might not make it quite as positive to be long this market, or doubly long this market is what they could be. We did finally see the first flash sale for corn this morning since March 2nd, and we thought that would raise a little more enthusiasm than it did, but I guess the sort of misinterpretation of the Russian person that talked about that, with talking about their tariffs on export duties, seemed to have the wheat pulling the corn down through the day, but we did see the little rebound at the end of the day.
So the last couple of days, speaking of the corn coming down, new crop corn has not been able to maintain a positive position while the old crop has. How worrisome might this be?
Well, I think that's part of the number one, the more acres we're talking about for the new crop here and in South America. The idea that the tightness is now, and if we do get the more acres throughout the world and everything. If you remember, the world carryout on the last WASD actually increased a little bit on corn. So, you know, it is the idea that we could see some really good weather and some really good yields. So, but it is a little worrisome to think that we're going to set new highs without some weather problems somewhere. We probably won't.
Hey, before I let you go, crop insurance done now. Do you have a rough percentage of what people did? Take less, take more, or stay about the same?
Most of them stayed same to a little more coverage, Todd. We saw a lot of people that looked at the price of 85% and they shuddered a little bit, but when it come time to sign up, why, they took it. They did just what Gary said to do, stay up at that higher level. We did have a few people that went with the ECO 95, not as many as I thought mightily, but boy, there's some sticker shock when we looked at that price too. So, but all in all, why, they did keep their insurance levels up pretty good this year.
Thanks so much, Wayne.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities. Late last week, the folks over at FAPRI, that's the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute at the University of Missouri Columbia, released a U.S. Agricultural Market Outlook paper. And we're now joined by Ben Brown, ag economist from there, who normally joins us on Mondays to talk about the marketplace. Thanks, Ben. We appreciate you for taking time with us today. I've got a whole series of things I want to talk about, but can you recap what this ag market outlook is and what it might have shown? In particular, I'm interested in your 2021 growing season, average season price numbers.
Yeah, sure can, Todd. Thanks for having me on, by the way. So, you know, the folks here at FAPRI, the Food and Ag Policy Research Institute, as you mentioned, put out their 10-year baseline every year in March. They do revisions throughout the year, but the 10-year baseline comes out in March and includes a whole series of crop input prices and expectations for crop size. And then they run them 500 times to come up with averages against different scenarios. I just joined here this year, so this is mostly, you know, the rest of the folks here that do a really great job. But when you look at their expectations for the 2021 growing season, projected corn prices right now come in at $4.06 per bushel, which is actually, you know, quite a bit lower than what the futures market would anticipate for new crop prices come this year. Soybeans coming in at $10.61, which is again pretty significantly lower than what the current futures prices are suggesting. And when we look at the acreage, about 92 million acres of, or 91.7 million acres of corn, and then 90.4 million acres of soybeans. And so those are the estimates that the folks here put together for the current year as we go out. Certainly increased, better picture than what we had in 2020 after, COVID-19 disrupted ag markets across the board. And so a better outlook, but still a couple of things that haven't returned to normal, even though ethanol used is back up above last year's dismal numbers. They still remain below pre-pandemic levels as well. And then, looking out, it's kind of a constant, right there below or at the pre-pandemic levels for ethanol, with higher blends making up for reduced overall motor fuel or liquid fuel consumption. So,
anything over the long term, over the 10-year outlook that we need to make note of that are of key importance?
Well, so at least in the assumptions, demand with China or China's demand continues to increase all the way through the production period, probably most noticeably for corn. Corn imports continue to increase over the projection period. Again, we've seen impressive corn export numbers by the Chinese this year on their need for corn due to dryness in the Black Sea region. And given where, we feel their corn stocks are, which we feel are significantly lower than where USDA currently is, given internal market prices within China, plus than what we've seen from their auctions, their internal state auction data, we do feel like they will continue to increase corn imports into the country, even though, the current stocks numbers show that they have roughly, about half of the world's corn stocks on hand. We believe those are too high, or at least the corn is in places where, it's hard to get to in bulk.
Speaking of stocks, the end of this month, just 14 days away now, the United States Department of Agriculture will release the grain stocks figures. That's on the 31st of the month. Have you been thinking about those?
Yeah, I have been actually, especially here recently, given that for corn, we have a lot of the data points for the year that we need to calculate the second quarter stocks numbers. We have to make some estimates for ethanol consumption or corn crush for ethanol, and certainly some conversions for exports. But the big question mark is feed and residual use in the second quarter. And part of the reason what makes this so tricky is that when we got the first quarter ending stocks number, we had a huge surprise in the market. Now, that day provided two significant data points. We got production, the final production estimates for the 2020 crop, which came in significantly below what many market analysts expected. But even if you subtract out that bullish market surprise due to the lower production number, the feed and residual use category number came in very strong. And again, if you subtract everything out, basically, you know, the implied feed and residual use number came in 341 million bushels above trade expectations for the first quarter of feed and residual use. Now, the reason I bring that up is because when we think about the first half of the marketing year, the first half represents somewhere between 65 and 70% of annual feed and residual use. And so if you take, you know, let's just say the middle, 67% of what USDA is currently estimating for feed and residual use, which is 5.65 billion bushels, 67% of that comes out to 3.785 billion bushels of grain. If you subtract off that very robust first quarter feed and residual use number of 2.724 billion bushels, that only leaves an implied second quarter feed and residual use number of just over a billion bushels, which seems low to me, given that normally during the second quarter, you know, that represents somewhere around 25% of our feed and residual use, and that number only associates 19%. Now, higher prices certainly push some feed demand out of corn into other feed grains like wheat, barley. And certainly with the decreased in ethanol production that we saw during the quarter, you would assume that there's less distillers grains available, which would then increase feed demand of corn as well. So kind of offsetting factors there makes me believe that that feed and residual use number of just over a billion bushels is rather low. But still, you know, if you take a more normal 25% of annual feed and residual use number and you subtract off the ethanol number and exports for the quarter, you know, we're looking at a second quarter ending stocks number of just under 8 billion bushels, 46 million bushels less than 8 billion. So that's one of our lowest second quarter ending stocks numbers we've had in a while. Certainly anything, you know, different than that would suggest that feed and residual use for the quarter was either stronger, if that number, you know, if the quarterly ending stocks number comes in below 8 billion bushels, that means feed and residual use remains strong during the second quarter. Anything above 8 billion bushels indicates that feed and residual use really tapered off as prices work their way higher. So, you know, that's kind of what we're looking for the ending stocks number. But given where ending stocks are right now for both corn and soybeans, really tight for corn. This is the tightest we've been at 9.2% since, at 10.3%. This is the tightest we've been since the 9.2% stocks use that we witnessed in 2013, 2014. You know, this year, normally the prospective plantings report that we get at the end of March overshadows the second quarter ending stocks number. My expectation is that many analysts, or if not most of them, aren't going to be looking at the ending stocks number, trying to figure out, you know, what this cash corn, at least until the next crop comes on board, you know, what prices have to do to either increase or decrease the demand for corn. So
the second and third quarter numbers can be pretty wonky in the grain stocks figures, and have been for a long time. I suppose if the trade is looking for a big usage number, that could be one of the surprise places, I would think.
That would be my expectation. And like I said, you know, normally, you know, we can get a decent number, but I think given what we saw in the first quarter feed and residual use, being a bullish surprise, increased feed and residual above what many people expected, and then USDA decreased annual feed and residual use for that month in January, you know, it's kind of a little bit confusing how we had this great feed number, but then USDA still lowered total feed and residual use for the year. So you start looking at the second quarter, and granted, prices have gone higher, and the cost to livestock producers have gone up, but so have a lot of the other products as well that compete with corn. And so I think that's what makes this year a little bit more challenging, is we probably have an unclear picture of what that feed and residual use number will look like.
And before I let you go for the day, you and Carl Zuloff penned an article for the FarmDoc Daily website looking at 50 years of distribution of ag products. Was that by state, and distribution in what kind? And are we talking financial or something else?
Yeah, so we get asked a lot about the concentration of agriculture in terms of what is, you know, what's happened in agriculture, and people look and say, you know, the landscape is not the same today as what it was 50 years ago. And I think we would all agree with that. And so what Carl and I attempted to do is we attempted to answer the question of how much has agriculture how much have we had concentration within the sector over the last 50 years? And we started off, we're going to do this three ways, and we've got some of the analysis already done for the other two. But the first one we started off with was the distribution of agriculture across the country. So looking at, has a state's share of total farm income changed? And again, this is all based on cash receipts for the current year. So taking, you know, the total cash receipts for agriculture for the state of Illinois divided by, you know, the U.S. total for cash receipts for the year, both in terms of both time periods, for the time period 1965 to 1969, and then from 2014 to 2018. Those are the two periods we're comparing. And I think we were interested and kind of surprised that there wasn't bigger shifts in terms of the distribution of cash receipts across the country. When you look at the ones with significant change, and again, significant means it has a statistical purpose, but you know, there was really only three states that had a statistical change either above or below when we look at the share of cash receipts. And those two states were California and Nebraska. Both saw a greater than what we would expect, or a significant increase in cash receipts as a share. And Illinois was the only state with a decrease in a statistically significant decrease in cash receipts as a share.
Can I make a guess here that California went up on dairy, Illinois went down on livestock, and Nebraska went up because irrigation came in?
And cattle for Nebraska. So an increase, yeah, livestock feeding in Nebraska. But you're right on the rest of them. Certainly, when we look at California dairy, an increase for them, but they also saw an increase in share of crop receipts. In fact, California led the country in share of crop cash receipt increases at 6%, or 6 percentage point increase, meaning that their share of U.S. cash receipts for crops increased 6 percentage points over that time period. And most of that is not in what we would consider, you know, traditional commercial row crops. It's more in fruit and vegetable nut production. And of the likes. But certainly, you know, California increased in dairy, increased in crop cash receipts. They had a pretty significant increase percentage point wise in dairy of 18%. For Illinois, yes, it was mostly livestock, nearly 8 percentage point decrease in hogs and share of hogs, 3.5 percentage point decrease in cattle, and then also a pretty significant decrease in dairy production as well. So
this first swipe was kind of like the specialization if it took place in a state.
I guess maybe the concluding remarks that can be made from this is, you know, despite all the changes that we've seen in agriculture since the 1960s to today, there's been relatively little change in the geographical distribution of cash receipts. A couple of things that maybe can be concluded from that is that, you know, technology has been evenly spread across the country, that technology has not benefited one part of the country more so than others. And it also appears that political regulations, state-specific regulations, have also not had a huge impact in terms of that share of U.S. farm income. Now, keep in mind, our period that we're looking at in the back half is 2014 through 2018. There's been a lot of state regulations that have been implemented in the last 3.5 years that if we do this again in the future, we might see a different result. But at least for the two periods we're looking at, 1965 to 1969, and then 2014 to 2018, there has not been large distributions or changes in the state share of cash receipts. So.
Hey, thank you, Ben.
Thanks.
Ben Brown is with FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. He's an agricultural economist for Missouri Extension. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. On this Tuesday afternoon, we're joined by Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Thank you, Don, for being with us. I take it there's a lot of snow on the ground where you are.
Yes, the Western High Plains and the Front Range of the Colorado and Wyoming Rockies. The biggest snowstorm probably in 18 years when we take a look at all the numbers coming on in.
Wow. So what did it mean, for instance, for you and the rest of the folks there in Cheyenne today? Anything?
Well, about 2.5 feet of snow. In fact, from Denver along Interstate 25 to Cheyenne to Casper, the average snowfall was between 20 and 36 inches. Now, that doesn't even include the 3 to 4 to 5 feet that fell in the foothills and mountains. Certainly, it's causing a lot of problems. Stock growers especially, and travels come to a standstill. However, some of the areas that got that moisture were in the midst of a pretty severe drought situation. So with 2 to 4 inches of water out of that storm, it's going to really, really help out. The plains, the winter wheat areas of Colorado, western Kansas, southwest Nebraska, saw the best moisture they've had in months.
And then on the flip side, the logistics must have just come to a complete standstill.
Yes, all the major interstates have been closed at one time. They're starting to get open. I know DIA, Denver International Airport, just got their runways plowed and open. So, yeah, it's one of those storms that you hear about that happens out west. They don't happen as frequently as you might think, but boy, when they do, they're very impactful.
How long ago did the snow stop?
The snow started during the day Saturday, and from Saturday, really late afternoon, all the way up till, well, early today, it was snowing in many areas.
Wow. So you're just buried. Are you getting warmer temperatures to help melt some of this away?
No. we'll be staring at these piles of snow here for a while.
For how long do you think?
Well, usually these March storms, you do get some warmer days, and they're coming. But the snow field is so extensive, it takes 2 or 3 days to melt some of that snow down before you can get the kind of temperatures to where you can get a lot of rapid melting.
Will there be rainfall coming at some point to help get rid of the snow and to help end the drought in the area?
Well, let's hope so. There's many areas in the central, western, northern plains, all the way to the California coast that are in moderate to severe drought conditions. We do expect more, but in these La Nina winters and springs, you can still have big storms like this and still end up with a deficit. So we have to see a follow-up as we get on into later this month and into April and May. That includes for the parts of the western Corn Belt as well that have had some dryness. Some of this moisture is getting into there. In fact, we think that as we go into late this weekend and next week, Todd, that there will be some rain to the Midwest and the Corn Belt, more rain than snow, a little bit of snow, but there is some better moisture getting further east as well.
Hey, thank you, Don.
Thank you.
That's Don Day. He is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media.